Karen and I'm an addict. I'm real, real nervous. First of all, I would like to say thank you to the convention for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope. And if I stutter or something, just bear with me because this is my first time. I'm just going to share with you all some of the emotions that I have had to survive since being in recovery. And the ones, I'm going to talk about one that was the most devastating to me, for me. And I'm just talking about me. And this is just my story. The most devastating emotion that I had to survive in recovery was messing with someone else's man while they was in recovery. And through that process, it was very, very humiliating. And it made me do some step work. It made me get in the hip pockets of my sponsor and my network. And I felt like I was in the middle. I felt like I was in the middle of this fellowship and had been stripped of all my clothing. You know, I felt naked. And through that process, a lot of people fell by the wayside. Some stayed and some left. But I made it through. I didn't use. I felt ashamed. I felt guilt. I felt remorse. I felt betrayal. The shame came in was the part that made me feel ashamed was that I tried to project this image that I'm this hell of a woman, you know what I'm saying, and then to deal with somebody else's man in recovery, that just wasn't cool. But it took people, like I said, like my sponsor, the steps, and my network to, and people, other women, to share with me that I wasn't the only one. You know, and then knowing that I wasn't the only one, it kind of made the pain a little lesser. But it took a lot of praying. I don't know. My network is real, 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 real close to me. And they carry me and they're here today. And I just thank God for everybody that came here to support me. Another emotion that I've had to endure here lately, what I've been enduring since I've been clean, is wanting family members to be clean as well. Going to my, it's like as soon as they call me and ask me to do this topic, everything just starts just crumbling, just start happening. I was going through so many emotions. And another one is the emotion of my mother is an alcoholic and going up her house and she trying to open up a can or something and she's shaking, you know, got DTs. And it was hard for me, you know, it's so hard to give family members the same kind of consideration, passion, compassion, and love that you give somebody in these rooms. And I was just like, Mom, I'll do it for you, you know what I'm saying? And I just bust out crying because I want her to get this thing, but I know that all I can do is continue to do what I'm doing and just lead by example, you know. That's another emotion that I've had to endure since being here and have to continue to endure. Emotions that I had to deal with early on were was getting clean and not having a job, losing a job, having to go to people in this fellowship to ask them to buy my sanitary napkins, buy my cigarettes, wash my clothes for me because I didn't have a job. That was very, very humbling for me, and it took a lot of humility. But I hung in there and I didn't use. You know, I hit that pavement on a daily basis in the hot, hot sun when it's like 90-something, 100 degrees outside in D.C., and you know what I'm saying? And it was days that I felt so inadequate and felt like so less than because I didn't have the pumps that it required for me to wear to go on an interview for the type of job I was looking for. And then it was overjoyed emotions when I would come home from being in the hot sun and it was a pair of pumps in my room or a suit in my room because I lived in an Oxford house and another lady couldn't wear it, so she passed it on to me. It was emotions like that that kind of outweighed the being out in the sun, you know what I'm saying? Knowing that the God of my understanding was there and he was carrying me. Y'all told me that I had to chase recovery like chasing the drugs. And I remember early on in the beginning when I lived in the halfway house, We used to all, they used to give us 2 tokens a day. And sometimes you would sell that token to get a dollar because they would give you a lunch and you really ain't eat. I don't eat cold cuts. So I would sell my token for a dollar and I would eat with that dollar and I would just go to a meeting and wouldn't worry about coming home or how I, not coming home, I wouldn't worry about how I was getting home. As long as I got to a meeting, I said, I'm going to be all right. You know, I would go to the old trust and I would go to the meeting and we would all go to the meeting and then I would just see somebody and say, can I get a ride home? You know what I'm saying? And they would give me a ride home. It was emotions like that that was so overwhelming for me that made me want to keep coming back. Being asked to share at this convention is overwhelming for me. It's so overwhelming. Before I came in here, I was so nervous. I just felt like busting out crying. And I feel that way now. Recovery is wonderful. I'm sorry, Jamie. Somebody told me don't be up here saying all the time. And I said I was going to try not to do that. I try to be open to suggestions today. Having women in my life is real important. Y'all told me to get a female sponsor. When I first came around here, I had several sponsors. And one of them, when I came here first, let me say this. I became a whore in this fellowship. And I substituted drugs for sex. And I was looking for love in all the wrong places. And it took things like walking in a meeting and seeing 3 people that I had slept with, talking with each other, and wondering, is what they talking about me? It took things like having sex with a man the night before after I met him at a dance, go to a meeting and they act like they don't know who I am. It took things like keep having sex with different people, last 2 minutes and then they gone and they don't see you no more. You know, it was things like that that, it was pain like that, that made me stop being a whore in this fellowship. And it took the women to pick me up and mend me back together again. At the time, I had a sponsor who was had promiscuous behavior. And because I was a whore, I can't call her that. But because... because I was a whore and I was trying to learn how not to be a whore. I can't go to a whore to stop being a whore. I gotta go to somebody that's not a whore to try not to be a whore. So I prayed and I kept praying and I found me a sponsor. I needed somebody to not be tough, have real, real tough love with me, but to be stern. I needed somebody to guide me and say, look, girl, you know what I'm saying? You got to do what you got to do. And I found her, and I've been with her for the last 3 years, 3 or 4. I thank God for her, and she's here. And I love her so much. So if you don't have a female sponsor, because you ain't going to get what you need to get from no man. Because a man can't tell you how you feel when you PMS and you feel like taking everybody's head off. A man can't tell you certain things, he just can't tell you that. You know, he can tell you, but he ain't got no experience. He don't feel what we feel. It's emotions like, y'all told me, when I was in that meeting one day and I was going with this guy, and he walked in with another female on his arm, I had been here long enough to hear that I don't care what happened, do not let anything or anybody run you up out of here. And I remember sitting in that meeting, I was fuming. I was like, I need to get my teddy, okay? And somebody was like, Hearn, that teddy is not going to make you. It's not going to break you. And I sat in that meeting, and I was so upset, and I was so hurt. And I just said, I just got to sit here. So I sat in that meeting while they was in the same meeting, and I just sat there in my chair, and I just raised my hand and shared how I felt. It's emotions like being betrayed or betraying someone and walking up to them and hugging them anyway. And them not being receptive, but you got to go on. You know, my sponsor, I'm on the seventh step right now with my sponsor, and it's been a lot of humility. Surviving emotions like when I just know I'm right. You know how you know you're right? And be dead wrong. And having to say I'm wrong. You know, it talks about in the 10th step that you don't have to be right all the time. And even if you are right, you don't have to say you're right. You could just be quiet, practice some humility, and just be quiet. You know, I'm really trying. I really am trying to stop saying that word. When I was using, I had emotions, but my emotions were like, God, please, if my mother has some money in her purse, please let the dope man be outside. I felt an emotion when they put me out on Hawaii Avenue. Put all my little stuff that was hand-me-down out on the street. And I stood in the hallway and I was getting ready to cry. And I just said to myself, well, why are you crying? You did this. If you had paid your rent, instead of looking towards your man to pay it, he wouldn't be put out. And I kind of calmed myself down. Being in recovery is so filled with so many emotions every day on a daily basis. And I have to pray, and I have to call my sponsor, and I have to call my network and ask them if I'm wrong or if I'm doing something, or before I do something, I'll call my sponsor, I'll call my network, and I'll say, look, this is what I'm getting ready to do. This is how I feel. Help me. Y'all told me that if I didn't raise my hand and I didn't ask for help, or if I didn't open my mouth, that I wasn't going to get any help. You told me if I kept doing what I was doing, I was going to keep getting what I was getting. And I was so tired, sick and tired of the pain that I was getting that I just surrendered. Excuse me. Recovery is wonderful. And the feeling that you get sometimes being in recovery is just so overwhelming that it's just indescribable. And if you get some good people in your hip pocket, you'll be okay. If you want to sponsor, or if you want to stop doing something, you have to get somebody that's not doing it anymore so that they can help you. I'm not going to sit up here and ramble. My mind is becoming a blank. And I guess that's because I'm so nervous. But this is another issue that has been coming back and forth, and I've just been feeling it on and off. I'm 33 years old, and I don't have any children. I've had 3 abortions, and sometimes when I see women with children, I go through emotions. Sometimes when I hold my niece, I go through emotions. I love my niece so much, and the people in my life know that I love her oh so much. And I'm engaged, and ain't nothing happened yet. Now, we're doing our part. But I can get so deep in that abortion thing sometimes that it's so depressing. I saw the sign on the back of somebody's car that said, if you had an abortion, you just didn't get rid of a baby, you just have a dead child. And that thing hit me so hard. I was like, whoa. I was on my way to work, and I had to, like, God, just help me. Some days it's real, real hard, but I know that God gonna bless me with a child when it's time for me to have a child. And I just love all my girlfriend's kids that got kids. But sometimes it's so hard, and if you're not a woman, you do not understand. That is not something a man can tell you about. I don't have anything against men. I have something against my father, but not against men. And if I'm not careful, I'll transfer it. I found that out working my fourth and my fifth step with my sponsor. I also found out that I have a lot of anger. I have a lot of anger. And it stems from my father. Because what I'll do, I told you I transferred. What I'll do is I will try to fix my father through my mate. And you just can't do that. And as long as I keep coming back and working these steps, I will be able to distinguish when I'm trying to do that. But it took working the steps to do that. I love my father today. I believe I've always loved him. I just didn't like his ways. And as long as I continue to work the steps, and as long as I continue to have the sponsor that I have and pray to the God of my understanding, I know that I'll get better. I believe that God has a way of preparing you for things. And I've talked about my niece, but my sister, the first abortion that I had, I know I'm jumping around. The first abortion I had, I was 16 years old. I was in the 11th grade, did not know who the baby father was. My sister was 16 when she had my niece. And right before my sister told me she was pregnant, I had a dream. And in the dream, I dreamed that she was pregnant. And I had such anger and resentment toward my mother. I dreamed that I just freaked out. So when she told me, I believe that was God's way of preparing me to let me know that she is going to have a child. And it helped me to deal with that anger and that rage and that resentment that I had toward my mother in that dream. Because when my niece came, I wasn't angry. I didn't have any resentments towards my mother. And I still loved my mother. But it made me feel like I wish I had kept my child. You know, I wish I had enough willingness and had enough courage to do what she did, you know, but I don't. I have courage now. I have faith. I have a whole host of a lot of people in my life. I'm not going to ramble on. I think that's enough out of me. And I want to thank the convention committee again for allowing me to share, and I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank Karen for speaking. And our second speaker, I'd like to introduce Joel.
I'm an addict. My name is Joel.
Hey, Joel.
And I was sitting there listening to Karen. Thank you, Karen. What came to me to do was the first thing I needed to do to get up when I got up here was to tell you that I surrender. You know? I surrender. I was talking with my best friend who shared at a workshop this morning, and we were talking about how, you know, being asked to do this and being given a topic, you know, it's like I know what's in there. And I know that God can bring it out. And it wouldn't be that hard, whatever it is that's to come out, if I was at my home group at a meeting. But the emotion, among other things, emotions can get in the way of me and God, you know. So it's like looking at what gets in the way and doing something like this. What gets in the way of letting God, you know, speak through me and give you whatever message that is in me to give you. And so it is about surrender. And the other thing I want to tell you as I begin is that my home group is the Another Look group in that meets at 8:30 on Sunday nights in Springfield, Virginia. And if you're ever over there, I hope you'll come see us. And that's important for me to say, not the least of which reasons is that I, a whole lot of whatever I've learned in these rooms about surviving emotions, I've learned in that room and among those people in my home group who have taught me. When I was first asked to do this workshop a couple months ago, one of the first things I thought of, which actually I think about fairly humorously now, was what came up for me was when I was a couple years clean, I was sitting and I was listening to a guy speak in a meeting who I really looked up to. I think I was about a year or two clean, and this guy had about 10 years or something, and I was struggling with lots of stuff, lots of emotions. I was in that place where the main speaker tonight, Greg P., I remember listening to one of his tapes years ago, and one of the things he talks about was after we've been in recovery for a while, the bluebird of feelings flies over. And it starts coming back. You know, the good thing about recovery is that our emotions, our feelings come back. The bad thing about recovery is that our feelings come back. And this guy was sharing, and what he shared was, he said, "You want to know how to live life on life's terms?" And I was in that place where all of a sudden my ears perked up. You know, I was like, this is it. I'm going to hear something, the answer, you know, because I'm looking for answers here. And what he said was, "Don't pick up, you'll find out." And that occurred to me, you know, you want to know how to survive emotions? Don't pick up, you'll find out. And I don't say that, you know, flippantly. There's truth in that for me, and I've learned here that the only real way that I have learned to survive my emotions is by doing it. Surviving my emotions clean, I should say. Surviving my emotions without picking up. When I first got here, I began to hear that, you know, this is a disease of feelings, among other things, and I could relate to that. I knew for, you know, I had some sense, I knew for a long time, that I used on my feelings, you know. I used to feel different. I used to feel better. It wasn't the drugs that I liked, per se. It was the way the drugs made me feel. That's what I was chasing. And it stopped working. And I have learned some things, you know, about how to survive my emotions. And whatever I know, I do know that everything that I know, absolutely everything that I know about surviving my emotions clean, and certainly everything that I may say today about that, from my experience, I have been taught by you. Narcotics Anonymous has taught me how to survive my emotions. And I also believe that one of the greatest gifts that I've been given here is the ability to survive my emotions. I have a real appreciation for what that means in my life and how hard that's been for me. I have had a real antagonistic relationship, an adversarial relationship with a real important part of myself my entire life, with my emotions, with my feelings. I've been at war with them. I judge them. I don't want to feel them. I repress them. I deny them. I'll do anything other than just to sit and feel what I feel, you know? Maybe the most important thing I was ever told here was that old saying we hear pretty early, usually, feelings are not facts. My feelings are not facts. They only have the power that I give them. And I gave them complete power before I came here. My feelings ruled my life. I made my decisions in life based upon how I felt. If I felt like I wanted something, I did whatever I needed to do to get it. If I felt a certain way about you, I acted a certain way. They ruled my life. I was at the mercy of my emotions, and I didn't know any different. And when I tried to control my life, well, I made it worse, just like I do now. I was thinking that there are two ways in which this has meaning for me, this topic. And one is the ways in which I have learned in here that literally helped me to survive the emotions that life presents for me. You know, there is pain in living, and I can admit that today, you know, and know that I am going to hurt in life, and life is going to be hard, and there are going to be emotions that I just don't like. And that's one piece of this. How to survive that, how to get through clean, something that I never knew how to do. The other piece of it is how not to create emotions in me that I know will take me down the road to where the only way that I will be convinced that I can survive them is to either use or die. And that's about changing the way I live. And that's about changing the way I live life. The first part of that, you know, how I've learned to, or what I know about surviving my emotions, I've been taught a lot of that by my sponsor. You know, I'm a real believer in what it says in the basic text about recovery is an active change in our attitudes and ideas. And I was told when I got here that I'm powerless over everything. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I'm powerless over my emotions. I don't know what I'm going to feel 5 minutes from now. But I'm not powerless over my attitude, and I'm not powerless over my behavior. And what I've learned is that my attitude and my behavior has a real direct effect on what I feel, you know, and a real direct effect. And I used to think when I got here, you know, that all the sayings that we have were real. You know, I used to kind of put them down in my head, and those are trite, you know, and I'm cool, and I don't need those kind of things. There's like I used to think, you know, these people have a bumper sticker mentality kind of thing. And what I learned is that I had a bumper sticker mentality all along. It's just that my bumper stickers said things like, this will never pass, you know? Life sucks and then you die, you know? Things look darkest just before they go totally black. Really, you know, that's what I believe. Those are the tapes that ran in my head that, you know, I know that the emotions that those kinds of tapes created in me were emotions about dying and emotions about hopelessness and emotions about I don't care and emotions about there's no use and there's no hope. And so I've listened real hard to the sayings that we have around here. And one of the things I did a couple days ago when I was thinking about this topic was to sit down and just write down what are the things that have been most important to me. Because when I hear the things that you all tell me in meetings, I try and engrave them on my brain, you know? And that's why I keep coming back, because I need to hear these things over and over and over, you know? And you all are the ones that told me that pain is unavoidable. I never knew that. Pain is unavoidable. But you also told me that misery is optional. You know, that I do have choices today, and that when life presents situations in my life that I am I heard about, when the pain of living hits, there are choices I can make, and there are resources here that I can use, and my use of those has a lot to do with determining whether that pain is going to move into misery. And when I get to miserable, I'm in real trouble. You know, I'm in real trouble because I get miserable enough, and I know, you know, I will use again. I will use again. Y'all, one of my sponsors told me a lot, you got to feel it to let God heal it. You know? Allowing myself to sit and feel the feelings, you know? To just sit and feel it and to know that I'd have to walk through this. There's no other way. You know, sometimes I call him and I tell him this stuff and he can hear how I'm trying to avoid what's going on. And he'll tell me, you got to let it begin before it'll pass. You know? I've got to let the feeling begin. And I've used, there have been times when I've used recovery, the program to try and not feel my feelings. I remember, Karen was talking about some of the heaviest emotions, that she's walked through, and it got me thinking, and I think there are there are three times in the time I've been here, three things, and one was walking through a divorce, and my mother's death, and one this last year when I got hurt physically and had to, for a short period, take some medications, all of which put me through a lot of real, a lot of pain, a lot of intense emotion. And I remember at times coming, going through my divorce when I would just be like a knife turning in my guts. I'd go get, all the literature, and I'd be leafing through this and this meditation book and this and this and this, trying to find the passage that's going to put me into making me feel better, not to just feel what I need to feel, I've got to feel it to let God heal it. And, this too shall pass. Again, that's one of those things that no matter how, you can't tell it to me, I can't read it. I can't, no matter how many times I read it, no matter how many times you tell it to me, whatever, the only way I can't learn it that way. The only way I can really learn it is actually by walking through stuff, and walking through it clean and not picking up. And actually finding out, and for me that's been a revelation in life, and it still amazes me that I can come through this stuff, that there really is another side to however I'm feeling, that I can come out of it if I don't use. One of the big ones, particularly during the hardest times in my recovery, And actually, that reminds me, I thought about what I should do so I don't forget, is say the most important thing right up front here. And the most important thing is that if you don't hear anything else that I say up here, if you're a newcomer or if you're an old-timer, the message is that if you're feeling lots of emotions, if you're feeling particularly the pain of living, if you're torn up because of a relationship that's ending, or because of life seems like out of control because of financial problems, or somebody real important to you is dying or just died, or you're just at your first convention. I was talking to somebody about, first convention. I remember mine, and that was an emotional roller coaster life. I went from feeling this incredible excitement and happiness and freedom to, within the space of 2 minutes, to feeling like I'm completely alone in the midst of thousands of people, and there's nobody here but me, and I don't belong. Whatever you're feeling, you can survive it. We can survive our emotions without using. We don't have to use. We don't ever have to use again. And I say that for me as well as you. I need to remember that. That's the most important thing I can say. Because I didn't know I could when I got here. I didn't know I could survive. I didn't know I could live life. And that's what you all have given me. I always wanted a way to be able to live life. Because I never was able to. No matter what I did, no matter what I tried, I always came back to that feeling increasingly of desperation and feeling hopeless and feeling like even at its best that the other shoe was going to drop. and I was going to die high. And I was never going to have what I really wanted, which was all along, to feel happy, really happy, to feel some peace inside, you know? I always came back. In fact, I heard I was listening to a speaker tape a few months ago, and this wonderful woman speaking. I think she's from Pittsburgh. I forget her name, but she talked about the emotional roller coaster that we do learn to survive here, you know. And the fact is, we need to learn to ride the roller coaster in order to get off the merry-go-round, you know. So no matter what we do, we come around, and here I am again, and I'm lost, and I'm confused, and it didn't work. And you know, the other piece that I talked about was that they told me my first thing my sponsor told me was that the good news was that I didn't ever have to use again. The bad news is that drugs were not my problem. I was my problem. And that was real news to me too. I mean, drugs were my main problem, and you were my secondary problem, and not having enough money was my third problem, and my family was probably fourth. And the point of that was the first message I got about this is a program of self-responsibility, you know. And that didn't just mean paying my bills. It meant that I'm responsible for my recovery. I'm responsible for my happiness. I'm responsible for surviving my emotions. And like I said, there are emotions I know that if I allow myself to live in ways that are going to get me to the place of feeling certain emotions, I will convince myself that I will use, you know? If I sit in misery too long or pain too long without doing something, I will use. If for nothing else, because I'll get to the place that I don't care, you know? Excuse the expression, fuck it. Every time I went back out, and I got a number of white chips before I got here this time, that's what it came down to. It came down to intense feelings that I couldn't handle. A lot of them, the trigger always resentment and anger, to the point where it was, fuck it, I don't care, you know, or this hurts so bad, I might as well use, because this ain't ending, you know, I might as well use. So, well, what have I learned, if anything, about how not to create the kind of emotions that I'm not going to be able to survive, you know, because I'm an addict? Well, I was talking with a good friend before the meeting out on the beach, and one of the things we were talking about came real clear to me, that one of the important things, milestones in my recovery, and I believe recovery is about healing and learning to care for ourselves, nurturing ourselves, learning to love ourselves. And I don't know exactly when, it's part of the process, but there's a place and a time in my recovery when I began to really feel something that I never felt in my life, and that was that I deserved to be happy. You know, I deserved to recover, and I was told that very early. I deserved to recover. To come to the place that I deserve to be happy, for me, means I deserve not to have to live in the misery. You know, I hear a lot of people talk, and I know I went through a place where life is starting to get better, and then there's this period where it's like, how do I not create the crises in my life? Because I'm so used to living in turmoil. I'm so used to living in conflict. I don't know what it's like to just live with being okay, you know? Either that or I'm used to living on the extremes, up here or down here, and just being okay is real foreign. So I went through a period where, even when I'm beginning to experience what that's like in life for the first time, I can do it for maybe a week, and then I'm creating a crisis. I'm creating turmoil in my own life. And for me, there's a piece of that is because that's what I believed, you know? I believed that that's what I deserved, you know? And one of the things recovery has given me is the knowledge and the fundamental belief that I deserve. I deserve the best in relationships. I deserve to be with, to have people in my life who treat me with love and understanding, you know? And the reason that's important to surviving my emotions is because a couple of the lines in the basic text that have been real important to me are, one, that there is something about the destructive nature of this disease which cries out for failure. And that's what my disease will do. And it will take me to a place of feeling like a failure and feeling desperate to where I don't see an alternative to those emotions. That's the misery. The other thing, other line in the basic text, which has been real important to me, is that we are the chief manufacturers of our own misery. And that's the self-responsibility again, you know? That if I don't learn to do things differently, learn to change my life, learn to use the resources that you have given me here, I won't survive, you know? I won't survive. And I don't want to go back to those emotions, you know, because I remember, I talk about the pain of living, and I'm certainly one, an addict who is able to stand here by the grace of God and say there is nothing that I have experienced, those emotions in recovery, not one, which comes close to how I felt before I got here. That desperation and that hopelessness, you know, and I don't ever have to feel that way again. When I got here in January of 1990, my emotional life, I was consumed by self-hatred, depression, desperation, complete failure. I'd lost everything. Didn't have a home, didn't have a job, didn't have any family, or I'd alienated the entire world. Didn't have a car, didn't have nothing, except for lots and lots and lots of financial amends. And you all taught me a different way, you know. You taught me that I can survive. You know, if you're new here, or you're having, or you're old, or you're having trouble with emotions, see, I can't survive my emotions alone. And one of the things that I know, and that was part of the reason that I told you who my home group is that there's not an emotion that I can feel right now, whatever it is, that there isn't somebody in this room who's walked through it and walked through it clean, you know, and can help me do that. And, you know, one of the benefits of a home group are the people that I've been in that room week after week for, you know, a fair amount of years now and watched us go through these emotions and helped each other, you know, and it's, you know, and we go through births and we go through deaths and we go through, you know, job losses and new jobs and divorces and sickness and everything, bankruptcy, and we come through together. And that's ultimately how we survive our emotions. You know, I can't survive my emotions. We can survive my emotions. You know, you are my hope. And I have a responsibility, you know. I need to be your hope, too. You know, just as you are my hope. Narcotics Anonymous has given me more than I could possibly express, and if I had 100 years, I could not begin to approach giving back to Narcotics Anonymous what you all have given to me. And learning how to feel in life is a new experience for me, you know. Learning that I can do this, and I'm real grateful for it. I'm real grateful for it. I still have a hard time. I still do a lot of judging of you know, these feelings are bad, you know. I I shouldn't have these feelings. I don't like these feelings. I don't want them, you know. And that's real. That's still a struggle for me. You know, I read this thing a while back that said, you know, feelings are the rainbow colors of life. And it's like, man, you know, it's like at the point, it was like, you know, that they're all just feelings, and they're all, you know, that they're all part of my humanity, being human. They're just feelings, you know. And see, there's that part of me that when I start hurting, that tape says, this is the worst thing in the world, you know. And one of the things that's been real important to me this year is continuing to learn to be not okay. You know, at conventions often I usually take away one or two things that really stick with me. And last year's convention here, one of the speakers said, the one thing I remember, and this has been with me all year long, was she said, you know you're getting better when you're okay not being okay. And, you know, talk about surviving emotions. And I'm a little better at that. You know, I'm a little better at being okay not being okay. You know, because it's learning to be in the valley too. You know, because when I... Is that, you know, God is good all the time? God is good all the time. Because I, you know, I've been one of those people that I'll come into a meeting and, you know, and I might tell you, man, I got this new relationship. I got a new job today. I got a new car. God is really working in my life. You know? But I don't come in and tell you that, you know, I had a fight with my girlfriend and my boss fired me today and I had a car wreck. God is really working in my life. You know? Because you know what? The way in which I judge whether God is good? By how I feel. You know? If I feel bad, God is working in my life, you know? This ain't supposed to happen. I mean, I may know that up here. I understand the words. But down here, it's like, is God working in my life? You know? Yeah. And just because I don't, just because life gives me something that that doesn't feel good to me, and there's a lot of things, life does not go the way I want it to every day. Just because that's happening, you know, I can't see it all. And my sponsor told me recently, I was going through something, and he said, you know, sometimes you have to just supersede the feelings with faith. You know, I was going through one of those periods it talks about in the text about the bugaboos. You know, you just, all of a sudden, you feel like you're back, and it all hurts, and nothing makes sense, and this and that, and we go through it, and it lasts. You know, and it may last a day, a week, a month. I don't know, you know. But it passes. And during those times, rather than focus on how bad it feels, I just need to keep walking and have faith that that I'm going to come out the other side. One of the things I heard here, which has been important to me in the worst times, is when you're going through hell, keep moving. When you're going through hell, keep moving, you know? I didn't used to do that. I'd stop. And you can try and change it, you know? And I know that today, that God is good all the time. And just because I don't understand what I'm feeling, just because I think this is the worst thing that I could possibly, that could possibly happen to me, that these emotions are the worst thing that could possibly be going on for me, just because I don't understand that, I can't see it all, you know? And if I really believe, which I do, that my God is unconditionally loving of me and my life is unfolding towards my ultimate good, at every moment, because of my loving God, then you know, if I turn my will and my life over to care of my God, but the only thing I'm grateful for is what I get back that feels good. You know, are the emotions that I think, that I judge as being what I want. Whose will is that? Whose will is that? So, you know, I can't talk about surviving emotions. I can't talk about surviving life. I can't talk about surviving a day without talking about my faith. You know? And knowing that, which is that surrender. You know? My greatest coping method throughout the majority of my life for all the emotions I felt was using. So I coped. And stopped working a long time ago. And my greatest coping method now that you all have taught me is surrender and faith. That's how to cope with life. That's how to survive my emotions. Bottom line is surrender. I believe that we are promised here how to survive our emotions, you know? And that if I stay here and I work this program, chase recovery like I chased using, that I will learn to survive my emotions in a way that I never thought was possible. And I believe I'm promised that, you know? I our text says we have one promise, and it's on page 104, I think, and we all know it, you know, freedom from active addiction. And I used to think, I read that for years, and I used to think that said freedom from drug use. And I've learned that it says freedom from active addiction. And what's active addiction? Well, for me, active addiction is living in resentment, anger, and fear. It's about all those other bumper stickers up here. You know, that there is no hope. It's about acting out my defects, you know, acting out of my emotions. That's active addiction. You know, if you give me freedom from that, you give me a way to survive my emotions. It's kind of like, you know, we have the all-inclusive first step, and I believe we have the all-inclusive promise, too. We only need one promise. Because if you free me from active addiction, you give me what you've given me, which is well beyond my wildest dreams about being here, about being able to live life. So that's, I wanted to end by telling you that I feel really just humble and blessed to be here, and I cannot thank you all for what you've given me. It's pretty amazing to me, this journey, you know. And I will, you know, not pick up, keep finding out at a time how to survive my emotions. You know, they're just me, you know, they're just feelings. And, they're not the facts of my life, and I know that I am, and I do. I wake up sometimes in the morning. I can go to bed feeling spiritually complete, and I wake up in the morning, and the vultures are circling the bed again. It's just kind of as though my default is, you know, and I need to get up every day and do the work to reset, you know, recovery as the attitude for my life. But when that happens, you've given me a way to realize that those vultures circling my bed and the fear that's there again that I woke up with every single day of my life are not the facts of my life. You know? Those are my feelings. They are not the facts of my life. And the facts of my life are pretty damn good when I think about what I need to be grateful for. And that's why, you know, that's why I need to get up and do the best I can to put my gratitude on in the morning like a set of clothes and try and wear it so that I can get through another day. This convention is a blessing. I'm also feeling a lot of positive pride in being a member of the Northern Virginia area of Narcotics Anonymous, and knowing the people and all the work that, and seeing the, all that's been done this year by the addicts that give me hope and help me survive every day, and to create this year, it's really, I'm feeling really grateful to all of them. So it's really, really a privilege to be clean and to be alive. And I love you. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Joel for sharing, and with someone we want to be just for today.
Just for today, tell myself my thoughts would be on my recovery and living, enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants me to